Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining us on today's conference on Stand Down Development and History. My name is Bailey Crone, and I'm with the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. You did receive a reminder email that had a link to where today's presentation is located, but I'm going to briefly go over how to access those materials before introducing our speaker today. If you go to the NCHV website or click on the link that was sent to you, you'll see a box in the right-hand side of your screen that has a red outline. If you go ahead and click on that, it'll bring you to the main teleconference schedule page. We have quite a few teleconferences going on at the moment, so you'll want to scroll down to the first one that says, 1, Stand Down, History and Program Structure. You'll see a link to the presentation there. It says Presentation PDF. Once again, you go to nchv.org. And on the right-hand side of your screen, there is a gray box with a red outline that says NCHV Conference Calls. Click on that. And then the second call listed there is Stand Down History and Program Structure. There's a link that says Presentation PDF, and that will bring you to today's presentation. If you have the right one, it should say Stand Down Meeting Service Needs in Local Communities, June 26, 2012. Hopefully everyone has that up. So today's call is going to focus on introducing new HVRP grantees and their community partners to the concept and process of Stand Down, and to give a preliminary overview of DOL Vets funding, the application process for new and returning grantees that have either never applied for funding or had previously included that funding in their overall HVRP grant application. If you go to slide 2, the agenda, you'll see basically what we're going to be talking about today. Now, the concept of Stand Down, as it specifically relates to the homeless veteran community, came from two Vietnam veterans, Robert Van Kuren and Dr. John Nacheson, who, with the support of the Vietnam Veterans of San Diego, held the first Stand Down event in San Diego in 1988. This marks the 25th anniversary of Stand Down events, and we are very lucky to have Dr. John Nacheson with us today to talk a little bit about his experience and the background of Stand Down events and what that process has meant for the veterans that he's worked for. John?
Bailey, thanks. I'm not going to talk about logistics because I know that's something that people are going to be addressing at some later point. But I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about how it started and, you know, what Robert and I always saw as the spirit of it. Kins, in a way, because Robert and I, back in, let's say, 1987, 1986, were working together in a, I think it was a Department of Labor program that had to do with looking at employment for veterans. And one of the things that happened along the way for us is that we would collect kind of information about people, where they were living, what they were doing. And to our surprise, more and more of the people that were coming into the program were reporting that they had no address. They were, in fact, living on the street. And so we started to look at that information, that data, and it became clear that there was something that nobody was talking about, that there seemed to be more homeless veterans on the street than anybody was aware of. So we talked about starting an event. Our goal, to be honest with you, was to just do it for 1 year in San Diego, was to, in a sense, try and level the playing field for people by bringing together services and information about benefits, give people a hot shower and dry socks, and make it kind of a stand down from being out in the field. Of course, it didn't end in 1 year, and it's kept on going and spread. But that first year we had, along with that mission of trying to level the playing field, our other mission really was to try and send a message to the community. And I think to the VA and all other agencies that there's a problem out here that no one is talking about. Since then, I think there have been statistics that say that one out of every three people on the streets of America is a veteran. And one out of – as you were, one out of four people is a veteran, and one out of three homeless men are veterans. And so that's an awful lot. That's more than should be. But what I wanted to talk about is the stand down itself and, you know, what our attempt was and what we feel are kind of the underpinnings of the program. A stand down, as I said before, is really basically an opportunity to sort of level the playing field. So I know that right from the beginning when people first come in, we want to make sure that they can get showers, they can get clothing, they can get access to medical care. We do now do dental care, podiatry, alternative medicine, anything we can bring on the field, we are happy to do. So we want to do that. But the truth of it is that there is another level of this behind all the services, which can easily be overlooked. And that has to do with trying to create a community amongst the people that are coming in. I think a lot of people who are on the street, who are homeless, are used to being clients somewhere, going to some office or some soup kitchen and being able to get services. And what we wanted to do right from the very start was to not turn folks into clients and make them instead brothers and sisters with us. At first, there weren't many sisters, to be honest with you, because I think back in the 80s, there was a lot of concern from female veterans that this may not be a safe place. There were just too many men there, and many of them had not had good experiences in the military. The other thing was, in terms of trying to organize this and put it together, we needed help. We needed to get community involvement. And one of the things that Robert and I heard was that if you bring all these homeless people together, fence them in, put them together in one spot, eventually what's going to happen is they're going to kill each other, and then they're going to kill you. And on that happy thought, we began doing stand down, knowing full well that that's not what was going to happen. The way we structure the program is that we try to build in group time, we try to build in recovery hour time, but most importantly, what we try to build in is opportunities for people to connect. My belief about all of us is that we are made up of many parts. Some of those parts, some of my parts, are not so healthy, some of them are pretty healthy, some of them are pretty creative, but we really wanted to have an event that was going to pull out the best from people, the healthy parts from people. It's very easy to create an event like this, again, where people come in as clients because that's what they're used to. They're used to maybe reporting about symptoms, suicidal ideation or even homicidal ideation or hearing voices or chemical dependency. I think what we try to do at Stand Down, what our goal has been, is to create an event where people come in and they bring in the event itself, the setting, the environment, the tents that we set up, all of it is evoking something in them that really wants to get off the street and something in them that really starts to feel some pride again. I want to evoke not the homeless person, but I want to evoke the person that once wore the uniform of their country when they were walking tall, when they were feeling good about themselves. And so that's what we really try and do at Stand Down. And we really try and walk our talk with this so that it's not just empty language. On the first day of Stand Down in San Diego, long about right after lunch, we have each of the tents, which is one of the setups of Stand Down, just as an aside, is we have billeting tents in San Diego. Not every Stand Down does that, but that's what we try to do, is to organize people in terms of tents. So we might have, let's say, 30 billeting tents, 25 people per tent, as an example, and each tent becomes a kind of a discrete unit. each tent is a family, each tent is a community, and then all of those tents together become the larger community. Well, on Friday, we want each tent to elect two of its participants to be, we call them squad leaders, you can call them anything you want, but the idea being is that there's going to now be leadership that's coming from the folks that are coming in. Certainly we have volunteers in San Diego. In fact, last year we had 3,600 volunteers, so many volunteers that it's difficult to find places for them. Not the way it was the first year. Historically, getting volunteers was very, very difficult. But now, many years later, and this will be the 25th year for San Diego, we have people who are kind of lined up to volunteer or play music at night or be part of our stand down. But those leaders that we elect on Friday become, to me, become very, very important. And so I'm directing the event. And in the beginning, I start all volunteers, my leaders. But then afterwards, after the squad leaders are elected, I want to interact with them. I want to pull them into the leadership and bring them around. And it can be something as simple of asking all the squad leaders to come to the stage and saying, I want you to go back and find out how many blankets your tent is going to need for tonight. And then come back and give us a report, and we'll give you the blankets. There's a couple of things that happen with that. One is, there's a sort of a trust thing that somebody is going to give me the right number. Well, I've got plenty of blankets, so even if somebody exaggerates the number, that's fine. I'll give them however many blankets they ask for and let them keep the blankets. The whole thing is building trust and having people feel safe. The first stand down we did, what happened was we only got a trickle of people who came in, and we couldn't figure it out. You know, what's going on? And then what we heard from the folks that did come in was that there was a fear out on the street that this was an elaborate sting operation, that we were just going to bring people in, and then the feds would come and the state police would come and arrest everybody and take them away. Of course, that's not what happened. And so we sent the few people that came in back out to let folks know that this was the real deal, that this was going to be okay, and we really wanted them to be part of it. So what I see at Stand Down is a transition that goes on. And the first day, the morning of Friday morning, people are coming in, they're waiting in line. Some of them have been camped out on the street waiting to get into Stand Down all week long. And they come in with their shopping carts and their bags and often dogs, which can be another problem. But they come in, and then watching them transform over the 3 days is an amazing thing. People start to relax. People become more comfortable. They start to feel safe. They start to join in with what's going on, and then they start to help each other. And for me, when I see mental health, it's often when somebody's able to step out of their own self-absorption, their own pain, their own echo chamber, and be able to listen and reach out to others. That's when they start to really get well and recover. So we look for that. And on Sunday when we have our graduation, it's a time of, you know, lots of fun and creativity when each tent comes and marches down as a group, as a unit, to the stage to receive their stand-down hats and other goodies. That's a very, very important thing, important time for us, because it gives them a chance to feel like they completed something. But also, it's an opportunity to use some creativity to laugh and have a good time. Because frankly, when we can laugh about things, when we can recognize the humor in things, is when we really start to do well in our lives and move beyond fragmentation and self-absorption and start to do better. So Stand Down is really got to be all about community. You know, I shared a couple of things that we did. There's quite a few of them. But it doesn't matter. Each community can be different. Everybody can do different things. One thing we have at Stand Out at times is a drum circle. That can work, and that can be very, very good to do. But there is no recipe. There's no prescription for how to do stand down and build community. But it really does start with trusting the participants, bringing them in, not having an us and them kind of clients and volunteers sort of a mentality, but more how can we do this, how can we collaborate, how can we learn in this few days together to try and say yes more times than we say no. And so that's my little intro to stand down. And Bailey, why don't I stop there and see if people have any questions?
Thank you so much for that overview. And we, you know, John and I were talking earlier before we came on the call just about how important it is to understand this philosophy. And I really just want to emphasize that for everyone on the call. You know, you can caught up in the logistics of needing to talk to this partner and make sure we have this resource and do we have enough of this, and you don't want to lose sight of what the ultimate goal is, which is that personal empowerment. And for folks who haven't been part of the event in San Diego, I saw that in 2010 there were over 3,600 volunteers at the event, which is mind-boggling.
That's 2011.
Oh, was that 2011?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a lot. That's a lot of volunteers, and that just goes to show you that people are very engaged in this. And you go once, and you can't wait to go back and be part of that community that's built there again. So, thank you for that.
I would just add this: that so many of our volunteers now are former participants, and that it really is people coming and trying to pay it forward. And that enriches our culture all the time, because even if our spirits start to flag, the people that were on the street who came through as participants at Stand Down and then come back to be part of it as a volunteer, as a tent leader or whatever, they just bring so much good energy, so much powerful energy, that I feel like that's really kept our Stand Down in San Diego very dynamic and continuing to grow.
No, that's a very, very good point. And it's such an amazing event. You know, there are those events, and like John said, they're all structured a little bit differently based on what is available in the community and what the needs are, but it's a really amazing event. And we're going to talk a lot about, you know, the logistics of setting up a stand down and meeting needs and different partners. But if anyone does have any questions specifically for Dr. Nicholson, we can take a couple now, and then we'll go into the rest of the presentation.
But only if you call me Dr. Nicholson, not Nicholson.
Oh, sorry, I always do that.
Okay.
Susan, can we do a little bit of Q&A?
If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star and the number 1 on your telephone keypad. That's star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Michael Darden.
Yes, my name is Michael Darden. I'm with Darden and Associates. My question is, has Stand Down in the San Diego area incorporated housing, medical care, and treatment?
Michael, we also, we of course have medical care at Stand Down and treatment at Stand Down. Housing is a problem for us, and I think one of the reasons is because the real estate in San Diego, being on the ocean, is so expensive that it's always a struggle for us. You know, there are so many beds that we can refer people to during the event that they can go to. That's why I think, in a way, we work so hard to build community, to help people reach escape velocity, because ultimately, you know, those services can be there, but the most important thing is that the person feels the fire in their belly, that they are motivated. And so we are trying to kickstart people. The answer to your question, I wish we had more housing. We're getting a little bit of it, but not enough.
Okay. One more question. Is it a possibility that they would be able to, I guess we would have to go to the House or Senate, but maybe incorporate a special Section 8 for just veterans?
A special Section 8?
Yeah.
We could talk more about that offline if you want to get in contact with me. But there's the HUD-VASH housing vouchers, which are it's a Section 8 voucher paired with the comprehensive case management from the VA Medical Center, and those are veteran-specific. But that's not necessarily within the scope of this call, but if you want to get in contact with me, we can talk more about that specifically.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Michael.
Your next question comes from the line of Keisha Cooper.
Hello, this is Keisha Cooper. I'm with the Wellspring. And I've heard you mention Drum Circle. Could you explain a little more about that?
Yeah. I'm a drum circler, you know, and so I go out in the park and play drums with, you know, friends. And so every year on Sunday morning, I bring a bunch of drums and a bunch of drummers and bring them to stand down. And for about an hour, we do kind of a combination of performance and participation thing. One of the things that we did when we didn't have a lot of drums that we could pass around to people was we took like these, you know, those plastic Easter eggs that you can get, and we filled them with shot and taped them closed and passed them out to everybody. We wrote stand down on them, and so everybody got a free egg shaker, and people come up and they're, you know, they're dancing and, you know, making noise. And it's a celebration. There's nothing particularly magical about how it's done. It's the idea, again, of kind of participation, of being joyful and being able to celebrate what's happening. Did that help, Keisha? Keisha?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Stanley Johnson. Stanley, your line is open. We'll move on to your next question, which comes from the line of Thomas Dredster.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking this call, and I appreciate this teleconference. Really quick, my organization is doing their first stand down, so I could use 25 years of expertise and mentoring. We're conducting it in August in Morristown, New Jersey, and you know, we're reaching out to various you know, organizations, including Stand Down, Northeast New Jersey. But I guess you know, logistics is definitely important to us, especially right now in terms of transporting or getting homeless vets to our event, and we're less than 60 days in. How would we be able to forecast, you know, the number of homeless vets that will participate is a big question for me. I mean, I don't know if, you know, we're going to be successful. We want to be successful in getting as many homeless vets as possible.
Right. I mean, over time, what happened in San Diego was that the word would be out on the street when Sandown was going to occur, and so you know, people would be bringing themselves to stand down, and we wouldn't even have to do much outreach in that sense. The outreach we do actually is to get people to register ahead of time if they want to go to the court, because one of the things with San Diego is we have a court where the judge will come on site and adjudicate misdemeanors and minor infractions. So we have to try and get a number. But it's always a challenge every year. I think for your first stand down, you probably have to prepare for a little more people than you're going to get. But, you know, going to shelters, going to places where homeless vets congregate, I think it's really going to be important. I assume you've been doing some of that, letting people know. Sometimes we just let agencies know, and it's not nearly as good as being able to go to a recovery program or a homeless shelter, or, you know, any kind of program where you might find a homeless veteran and talk to them and say, look, we want to get the word out. Would you help us? In our first year, before we did Stand Down, we actually had a little barbecue in the park and invited homeless veterans to come. And we got a couple of hundred folks that showed up for that. And what we did was we gave them a button with it said Stand Down with the dates of the first Stand Down. And kind of we sent them out kind of back out into the world with those buttons to sort of tell people about it. So I think that spreading the word and getting and doing the marketing, the most important thing is to find your way, insinuate yourself into the homeless veteran community and do the marketing that way.
Okay. Thank
you. All right. Thanks, Stanley.
Your next question comes from the line of Ivy Webb.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, on the goods donation, what is Good 360?
Oh, we will get there later, a little bit later on in the call.
All right. Thank you.
No problem. That might actually be a good switch point.
Yes. So I want to thank everybody and wish them luck with this. I think that one of the things that's happening is that the Stand Down program is really moving well in this country, and we're moving hopefully to a place where we don't have to do Stand Downs. My dream always is that one day we'll get all set up to do a Stand Down and no one will show up except volunteers, and then we'll all have a big party. And so with that, I'm going to say goodbye, and thank you very much, Bailey, for including me in on this call.
Thank you so much for making time for this. I know you have a lot going on, and for folks who know about the San Diego event, it's coming up in the next couple of weeks here, so they're very busy over there. But I had to bother them to get you on the phone call today. So thank you so much for being part of it and for sharing your expertise.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And for folks who have questions, we're going to have some more Q&A at the end. I'm going to go through the rest of the slides now. If you have those pulled up and you want to go ahead and go to slide 5, that's where we're going to start, the one that says Unmet Needs of Homeless Veterans. I'll give everyone a second to get there. And I will go through these fairly quickly, so if you do have questions that we don't get to today, feel free to email me. I'll give my email address at the end. If we have a lot of questions, and I think it would be helpful to get the information out there to everyone on the call, we'll be sure to put up a Q&A fact sheet at the end. But the audio from today's call, as well as the presentation, will remain up on the website, www.nchv.org. Right-hand side, the box that says NCHV Conference Calls, you can get the presentation right there. So starting on slide 5, as John mentioned, if we're going to fulfill the dual objective of Stand Down, which is creating that community and providing services, Stand Down organizers need to build rapport with the homeless veterans by adequately pairing the services with the needs whenever that's possible. As you see, not every community has the capacity and not every event is intended to meet all of the major needs of homeless veterans, but a successful event will leverage community assets to meet the known and most immediate needs of participants to set that foundation. Looking here, you see a snapshot of the national unmet needs as identified by consumers and providers, respectively. This is from the 2010 Challenge Report. I have a link to this at the end of the presentation. You'll notice that the majority of unmet needs generally require longer-term interventions. They require substantive consumer buy-in, and they serve as pretty substantial barriers to gainful employment and the transition into independent living. By creating a strong community, setting up services to meet immediate needs, and creating the referral process to meet those longer-term needs, Stand Down events can remain a critical component of ending homelessness among veterans. In 2010, the VA documented 196 Stand Down events, which was an increase from 2009. There was a 4% increase in the number of veterans that were served by these events, and an 8.5% of these veterans were women. They also served nearly 6,000 spouses and 1,800 children. So overall, the 196 events served, I think it was over 55,000 people, so 44,000 veterans. These are pretty impressive and daunting figures, and they show quite a few important trends. First, the increase in new stand-down events shows increased coordination between partners at the local level, but it also alludes to an increased need. As more men and women return from Iraq and Afghanistan, they and their families will be faced with many hardships that affect their income and housing stability. There are successful prevention programs, and as John mentioned, we're moving into a stage where hopefully we won't be seeing homeless veterans because we'll have the mechanisms in place to meet them before they come homeless or to rapidly rehouse them if they do become homeless. Programs like the Veteran Homeless Prevention Demonstration or the Supportive Services for Veteran Family Programs. These can have a profound effect on the number of veterans experiencing homelessness for the first time, but it's likely that stand-down events will continue for the foreseeable future, and we'll see more and more of younger veterans accessing services. If you go to slide 6, we've talked about the dual objective of stand-downs and the importance for homeless veterans, but what's the role you're going to play? What will your organization play, or you as an individual? Where do you fit into this mix? If you're an event organizer, you'll aim to provide as many of the services listed here on slide 6 as possible, either through in-house expertise or through partners in your... If you compare this general list of services to the overall needs that are on slide 5, you see how stand-down directly meets the needs, sets up the process for meeting them through referral, or builds a foundation for successfully addressing what the major needs are. A couple examples, for legal assistance with warrants and fines, homeless court, which is not present at all stand-down events but is a pretty vital attribute for many of them, homeless court can help meet that vital need. For long-term permanent housing, you can have access to grant and per diem facilities for individuals who are ready for a transitional housing situation, and they might not be ready yet for permanent housing. Or there's HUD-VASH and other permanent housing referrals that can be made, or at least the beginning starting to be facilitated through the stand-down event. An example of building the foundation, a lot of the unmet needs are related to job training or employment issues and income supports. Stand-down events provide clothing, dental care, and detox, and you know, AA and NA meetings that can help prepare the veteran for having that interview and engaging successfully in the employment process. This isn't by accident. This connectivity and the services that you're seeing here are made to directly correlate with those needs that are needing to be addressed for the homeless veterans. So there are different types of stand-down events, and the one that John was describing is the traditional stand-down, obviously, because it was the very first one. We're going to go through what the four different models are. I think this is useful as if you're a first-time event or if you're wanting to get involved in an event, it's useful to think of these four different classifications to try and structure what your resources are and what the needs are in your community so you can see where you can most leverage the assets that you do have. So if you go to slide 8, this is the classic stand-down, and this is a lot of what John was talking about. When we go through these, I'm not going to go through all of the services that are provided because you can read through them, but what you'll see is that with the 3-day event, there's going to be that larger network of services because it has that twofold goal. So creating that community that fosters empowerment, but also providing either direct access to services or referrals to services that provide that holistic, comprehensive care. Now, this can be a little bit intimidating for organizations that are wanting to get involved with or start stand-down for the first time because so much that's offered here. If you have certain grant programs, like for HVRP grantees, you have a lot of this connectivity already through your program, and you can leverage a lot of those assets to have a successful stand-down event. But putting on a 3-day event financially and making sure all the pieces go together and having the infrastructure to put together this network can be daunting to start off with. So just keep in mind that you can start small and you can always add on as the years progress. Close to 20% of the stand-down events that were registered with the VA were multi-day events, so either 2 or 3-day events, usually fitting this structure. The average attendance was 377 veterans for the 3-day events and 442 veterans for the 2-day events, just to give you a sense of what the average size is across the country. If you go to slide 9, this is the 1 or 2-day events. These are usually one-day events, the Homeless Veteran Resource Fairs. Now, as you see, the list of services provided here is substantially shorter, and that's because this doesn't necessarily, if you have a one-day event, you're not necessarily going to have the extensive community building that comes with the multi-day event. If you have a one-day event, obviously people aren't staying the night. You probably don't have the sleep tents. You might have those for certain individuals, but it doesn't have that long-term connectivity, and you might not have the tent leaders like you would have in a multi-day event. It really will be dependent on the structure, but for a lot of the one-day events, the focus is more so on the provision of services and less on the community. That's still important to keep in mind that the community is an essential asset that you want to be able to build, but the provision of services takes on a heftier role here. For the Homeless Veteran Health Fairs, this follows the same process where a lot of the services are really focused on providing on-site, direct access to services whenever possible, but for the most part, it's a referral process. Whereas the previous two models we discussed, more of the services were provided on-site for this one, and the next model we'll discuss, the services are largely through referral. So you will have someone who comes in, and they're given access to a community partner that will follow up with them. Now, the important thing here, if you are going to have this type of event, is to make sure that your connectivity to your community and government partners, so the folks in the Career One Stops, any of the federal grantees, so the SSVF programs or HVRP programs that you're working with, and your community partners that want these services, that relationship has to be very solid, and that referral process has to be set in stone so that people don't get lost in the mix. Because this is so heavy on the referral side, you have to have that connectivity and that trust and that that open communication. Otherwise, this process starts to fall apart and you're not going to be able to – you can build an initial rapport that can be very quickly disrupted. The fourth category is the job fair. This is on slide 11. Now, this still includes many of the same healthcare referrals of the previous events, but the focus here is largely on providing the services that are going to get the homeless veteran ready for employment. For HVRP grantees, you can view the deliverables here in a similar fashion to your HVRP program, so what your proposal. The provision of employment and the connection to training services to facilitate employment is going to be one of your prime objectives. So employment is going to be central in this job fair. But there's also the recognition that other services will go into supporting that person's employment readiness. So that means the connection to the VA Medical Center and appropriate housing options. But you're going to do that using your partnerships, not your program funds. And we'll talk later about the DOL Vets application process, but no HVRP funds should be used for the stand-down event. Now, on slide 12, I'm not going to go into a ton of depth on each one of the steps because VVSD's stand-down guide is absolutely fabulous. I have some links at the end. I'm not sure if that's included on there, but I'll put it up on the website. I definitely suggest reading the manuals that have been put together on developing a stand-down event. They go into much more depth than we can go into on a phone call here, but they can really walk through what each one of the steps is for you and help you as you conceptualize your event. Now, as you plan out what category of event you want to host or decide how you'll fit into an existing event, these steps are going to be helpful as you determine your capacity as an organization. For example, you may not be able to lead a new event, but you can be part of an advisory body, you can donate a site for the event to be held, or you can be involved in raising awareness in the community or doing outreach. So as you can see, a lot of these steps might occur together. It's just going to be dependent on which role you are going to fill. Now I'm going to talk about the support, the different funding and donation options. The first one I have listed there is the DOL Vets funding, which we're going to go into in the most extent here. And for folks who have registered for the second call, which will be on July, I believe it's the 11th, and there's more information about that on our website as well, We're going to go into a lot of depth on the application process itself there. So if you are going to be applying for that funding, you definitely want to be part of that call as well. DOL Vets awards HVRP grants to expedite reintegration of homeless veterans into the labor force, and a portion of that overall HVRP money is used to support stand-downs. Now, these service stand-down are often a catalyst to helping that veteran reintegrate into employment and independent living, so it's definitely a very good pair to the HVRP program, which is why there is that support. In fiscal year 2010, Vets supported 81 events through $637,000 in grants. So after we talk about the DOL Vets funding, I'll talk a little about the VA Medical Center support and the work that you could do with your medical center if you're not already involved with them, and then we'll talk about the in-kind goods and financial support. And I realize we're kind of running short on time, so I apologize in advance if we don't have a ton of time for Q&A, but I'll be sure to get to your questions if you email me also. Okay, so going on to slide 14. So stand-down funding is a non-competitive grant award. It's awarded on a first-come, first-served basis until all of the funds are exhausted. The availability of the funding is dependent on congressional appropriation each year. It's important to know that the funding from DOL Vets can only be used to support homeless veterans. When we go through what are allowable and unallowable expenses in a minute, you'll see that designation, but be sure that if you are creating a budget for DOL Vets funding, submitting that application, that all of your expenses are specifically for the homeless veterans. If you're going to apply, you need to be able to demonstrate that the funding is going to be used to purchase or rent goods and services for these veterans. We'll go over all of the pieces that directly apply to that. You can serve other people, so your volunteers, your support staff, and other homeless individuals, but the DOL Vets funding can only be used for this. So there's a maximum of a $10,000 award for a multi-day event, or up to $7,000 for a one-day event. For this fiscal year, there's still funding available, so if you haven't yet submitted an application, you need to do that ASAP. If you want, we can always have an individual consultation to talk about how you set up this funding, but once again, definitely be part of the call on the 11th. And it's important to note, too, that don't automatically assume because you are submitting an application that your entire funding amount or your application overall will be approved. Be sure to follow the steps that we're going to outline here, because just like any federal grant program, you have to make sure you're following the notice in the Federal Register in order to receive funding. I know that sounds self-explanatory, but it's very important. Just because it's non-competitive doesn't mean it doesn't require quite a bit of effort. So moving on to the eligible entities, you see who is eligible there. If you don't yet have an established DUNS number or you haven't registered with the Central Contractor Registration, I have links at the end. Those are things that you will need to do in order to apply for funding. And you also need to have that familiarity with the area and population to be served. You can gather a lot of that data through your COC, your continuum of care, point-in-time count, through the challenge report, and we have some other resources that can be helpful there. Now, organizations that aren't eligible would be those registered with the IRS as a 501c4, and if you're debarred or suspended, you'll also be excluded from the ability to apply for stand-down funds. So we talked earlier about what services are generally offered at stand-down. For DOL Vets funding, if this is something you're applying for, the minimum services listed on slide 16 are components that must be part of your program activities. First, you have your employment services, so that connectivity to your DVOPs and leavers is really critical. You can create that connectivity if you haven't already by being in contact with your Career One Stop. HVRP grantees are obviously engaged with themselves, but for other entities that are putting together stand-down events, having that connectivity to HVRP grantees can help facilitate employment and training opportunities for the individuals that come into your stand-down event. because you will need to provide the medical services that are not going to be covered under the DOL Vets funding. You have to have that connectivity to the VA Medical Center. As John mentioned earlier in the call, there's so much that they do provide to support the veterans in your program. And for a lot of the folks that are going to come into your program, they may or may not have had that connectivity beforehand to the VA Medical Center, so facilitating that is important. Different types of food is obviously going to be necessary, as well as clothing and appropriate housing referrals. Like HVRP, the housing referrals need to meet the actual needs of the individual, so whether that be transitional, emergency, permanent, or permanent supportive housing, having that connection to those different resources in the community will require being involved with the continuum of care and with veteran-specific housing opportunities. I'm not going to go through all of the allowable expenses because you have them all there. Just once again, I want to note that everything here must be for homeless veterans only. All of the food, clothing, hygiene care kits, all of that must be for the homeless veterans, so not for any staff or volunteers or anyone associated there. Also, you can use some of the funding for transportation, so bus, van, car, taxi rentals, and for the gasoline for that transportation. So the individual is asking about transportation expenses. This could be a way to help with some of those costs. I will note here that non-prescription reading glasses can be covered. Prescription reading glasses are not covered because those should be provided by the VA Medical Center, but you can pay for non-prescription reading glasses. Now the fun part, the unallowable expenses on slide 18. Any of your admin costs, any of your programmatic staff costs, any giveaways, none of that can be covered by DOL Vets funding. If you have that connectivity to your VA Medical Center, which you have to have in order to receive funding for your stand-down event, you should be providing healthcare-related expenses, or you shouldn't have any healthcare-related expenses that would be charged to the DOL Vets funding. And it says that the other and miscellaneous categories will require clarification. If you can avoid them, just avoid them at all costs because you're going to have to clarify at some point, and everything will have to have a specific dollar amount and an explanation of why those pieces are essential. So I would just avoid having an other or miscellaneous category in your application or your budget if you can avoid it. The application process is on slide 19, just to give you an idea of how that flows. The SGA was released on March 10th of last year, and that covers through 2013. I would go and review that. There's a link at the end of the presentation. You can download all the instructions and the application forms, and you want to be able to send in your full application more than 90 days before your event. And once again, you have to have that done in the CCR number. What else do I have? Oh, and for those of you who don't know what a DVET is, it's your State Director for Veterans Employment and Training. Apologize for speaking in alphabet soup sometimes, but that's an important one to know. After you submit your application, the grant officer will notify you if you are approved through an award letter. From there, you'll have to complete the financial form to get set up in the payment management system so that you can draw down your funds. And the next call in July will go over how you draw down your funds, what are the important dates for doing that, so be sure you're part of that. Moving on to the funding and support. In 2010, VA Medical Center volunteers participated in 70% of recorded events. Regional offices participated in 63% of stand-downs. Having that VA support is multi-pronged. Your homeless veteran program staff can offer connectivity and referrals to housing and other support services, while other VA volunteers can provide the medical care and access to benefits. Now, there's also national level funding that is provided to VA medical centers to support stand-down events. A lot of times this will go to the stand-downs that are held on the VA Medical Center campus. It works a little bit differently in each program, so I would definitely encourage you to be in contact with the homeless veteran program staff at your medical center to see if that funding is being used for their event, how you can be involved in that, or if it's not, if that's something that can be applied to your independent event. But you should talk with them directly about how that process will look. When you're putting together your budget, the donations of goods and money will likely be your largest components. The DOL Vets funding is definitely helpful to supplement and to help you get the homeless veterans employment ready, but you're going to have so many expenses that are really large that being able to secure additional donations and those in-kind donations is really, really critical. I offered some partners here. Good360, as the gentleman asked about earlier, that's a partner with NCHV. They can offer, they receive surplus donations of various goods that they can then post on their website. Are registered with Good360 as a nonprofit. You can set up a list of the different products that you will need either as an organization to support the participants in your program, or even if you are going to hold a stand down event and you have the capacity to take on a larger amount of donated goods, you can receive a lot of important goods. So things that would normally go in the personal care kits and those kind of items that can support your system. We actually, just a little plug for NCHV website, we have a new website that will be coming up within the next few days, hopefully by the end of this week, maybe early next week, and that will have a link to our portal for Good360. They're a great organization, and there's a lot of good opportunity there. For a lot of stand-down organizers, we know that donation of meals has been a huge asset. You can get local churches or community groups, Eagle Scouts, someone to donate a meal, and they can be the sponsor for a meal. I know that that's been extremely effective. And just a quick note about some non-traditional partners that folks can think about reaching out to, disability agencies, employment networks through Social Security Administration, state vocab, rehab agencies, your local law schools, and others can support your service delivery. Domestic violence shelters, church groups, and even student veteran organizations on college campuses can be really useful in assisting with outreach. I encourage you to think very broadly when you are developing your plan of connecting to partners in the community. Now, I ran through a lot of that quickly. The last slide has a bunch of resources that will be helpful to you. I'll just toss in a couple more things and then take a few questions. For individuals who have a stand-down event but either don't have a homeless court or want to know more about homeless court, there will be a training on developing the homeless court program this year at the San Diego Stand-Down. If you are interested in that, please get in contact with me, and I will make sure that you have all of the materials for that. If you can attend, it would be really useful. And also, if you are a stand-down organizer, I encourage you to fill out our legal services survey. NCHV has put together a database of the legal services that are offered at stand-down events, so that way folks in the legal community, independent attorneys, law schools, folks that can offer their services, hopefully at no cost, can get in contact with events to provide those services to the veterans of the programs. And I think that's about all I have for the moment. We can go ahead and open it up to some Q&A.
If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star and the number 1 on your telephone keypad. That's star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of Jeff Schnorr. Jeff, your line is open. Your next question comes from the line of Cornelia Hudson. Your next question comes from the line of Rosalinda Smith.
Hi, my question is...
third time's a charm. Hello.
Hi, my question is, if your 501(c) is pending, are you still eligible for the DOL Vets funding?
How long until you'll receive notification of that?
Probably 2 months.
Okay. Do you fall into any of the other eligibility categories?
I do have my DUNS, which you would have needed.
Okay. And you're not a 501c4, just to clarify.
No, I'm not.
Okay. I would actually, I think you should probably get in contact with the state director to talk about the timing, depending on when your event is and when you can submit your application.
Mm-hmm.
It might still work if you wait until you receive your 501c3 status, or you might be able to submit it beforehand. But you'll probably want to talk to the state director about that just to talk very clearly about what the timing will be for you and your event. If you want to get in contact with me, I can make sure that you have the contact information for the right person.
Okay.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Mick McComb.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm with the Pasco Veterans Council here in Newport Richey, Florida. And I understood you to say that there were still funds available that hadn't been requested. I need to know what agency that was and what the contact information is.
Okay, so that's for the DOL Vets funding.
Okay.
And I would encourage you to be on the call on the 11th. We're going to talk a lot about that application process. It's in response to the Federal Register note. I'll link to it on the very last slide. I would encourage you to look through that. That has really clear guidance on what you need to do to apply and all of those pieces. But we're going to go through that on the call in July as well. But we can talk offline about that if you want some specific guidance on where to go for that funding.
Okay. Just one more question. Mm-hmm. There was a program that was in place last year. And on the 17th of November, they made a decision to stop the program. Is this in any way tied with that federal program that stopped on the 17th of November last year?
I'm not really sure which one you're talking about.
Well,
do you know what it was called?
I've got an email here from them about it saying they wouldn't entertain any more requests, but I don't remember the name of it. It's the Department of Labor something or other.
Okay. If you want to forward that to me, that might be great. I will just say that as far as I know that there's still funding available for this program year for Stand Down, but you will need to apply for that sooner rather than later because it is a limited amount. It was anticipated to be around $600,000 per year.
We had it and submitted it, and they told us the program was stopped, so they just sent it back to us. So. Okay, it shouldn't take much to update one. I appreciate your help, and I'll get you a copy of that letter that I've received.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. I know we're running over, but can we take one more question?
Certainly. Your next question comes from the line of Stanley Johnson.
Hi, Stanley.
Hi. I didn't have a question.
Oh. You want to make one up? That's okay. We can go on to another one.
Okay, your next question comes from the line of Dorothy Walsh.
Hi. I have a question about the homeless court. I missed a little bit of what you had said. How do I find out more and learn more about conducting a homeless court?
So Steve Binder, who is the founder of Homeless Court, he's actually doing a training. He does trainings all around the country, but he's doing one specifically this year at the San Diego Stand Down, which will be July 13th, 14th, and 15th, obviously in San Diego. So he'll be doing a training on that, on the development of that program. If you want to get in contact with me, I can send you the contact information for that. If you're not able to participate in the training, the physical training in San Diego, I know a lot of folks have, you know, time constraints, and it's a lot to get out there financially and time-wise. We did a teleconference training with him a couple months back, but we'll hopefully do another one in the near future to kind of follow up on that process. It's a great addition to a stand-down event, so if you want to get involved with setting one of those up, just get in contact with me, and I'll make sure we get you the right pieces. And I don't think it's anywhere on the presentation, but my email address is just bcrone@nchv.org. So it's bcrone@nchv.org. And again, my name is Bailey Crone, and I'm with NCHV.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I know we probably have more questions, and I apologize that we ran a little bit over. please do email me. We're going to send out a survey shortly. You can include the questions that you have in that survey, or you can just send me an email directly, and I'll be sure to get in contact with you very quickly. So thanks, everyone, for listening today and for your participation, and I look forward to working with you. Thanks.
Thank you for participating in today's conference. You may now disconnect.